Greetings, friends. This is a recording of the Truth of Happiness course, Week 3, Tuesday class discussion and Q&A on integrating Shamatha Vipassana meditation in the context of the Four Noble Truths and the broader framework of the Eightfold Path. This talk was recorded in Frenchtown, New Jersey on December 22, 2015.
And good evening, everyone. This is our fourth week, and I'll be introducing the wisdom factors of the Eightfold Path tonight, right view and right intention. But first, I'd like to hear how your homework went and your reading of the Four Noble Truths, and any questions or comments about that. And start with Ram.
It went pretty well. I just got lost in several other readings of the Four Noble Truths, and I'm still trying to figure out how those different interpretations of it work for me. It's starting to get more clarity. Because for a while I didn't quite get how they worked. I just ran into a site called Secular Buddhism.
Yeah, I've seen it.
And there was some interesting, some clarifications there on whether or not there are truths or you know, how this works and how it relates to his first lecture, his first sermon. I'm getting engaged here.
Good. I mean, that's the Dhamma is the Four Noble Truths. And everything the Buddha taught was to bring understanding of the Four Noble Truths. And it can be confusing because the problem is... that's not confusing. The problem is presented in the First Noble Truth, and the solution is presented as the Fourth Noble Truth. The cause of the problem is described, and what I think is the most important part, if you can place an importance on just one of them, is the Third Noble Truth, that cessation of suffering is possible. But if you take all four of those things together, you realize, well, this is really what the Buddha is teaching. And if you can hold that in mind, be mindful of what the Four Noble Truths represent, then the other teachings can make sense and you know how to apply them. But without a good foundational understanding of the Four Noble Truths, it's hard to make sense of anything. It's hard to understand why we would meditate. It's hard to understand where the moral and ethical factors come into the path. In fact, a lot of Buddhist schools just discount most of that because they feel that all that we need to do is meditate and this magnificent inner Buddha nature will just arise spontaneously. And it's not something that the Buddha ever taught. And you think if it was possible, he would. Despite the confusion, and I think sometimes resistance that our conditioned mind has to accepting the Four Noble Truths, they are very simple once we start integrating them into our lives and seeing how they work. If you walked up to somebody on a street and they said they have all the answers and they told you the Four Noble Truths, it would mean nothing to you because there's no context for developing that understanding. And I think I think that's why the Four Noble Truths are often discounted as kind of an archaic expression of the Dhamma. In fact, they're often called that. The Four Noble Truths in the Eightfold Path, well, that's just an archaic teaching that the Buddha gave to people that didn't really have the understanding that we have today, and we can understand deeper. To me, that just sounds like an ego personality saying something like that.
Well, if you want to do Buddhism as a spiritual practice, that's one thing, but if you want to do it as a practical way of dealing with your life, you've got to start with the Four Noble Truths.
Yeah, you do it. Again, so that's, and the progression too from learning meditation the first week, the Four Foundations of Mindfulness, then the Four Noble Truths. And it all fits together and starts developing a system of really understanding the nature of the unsatisfactory nature of life and the cause of it. So, Kevin, how about you? How was your week study?
And good. You know, I'm sticking with the practice and, just to go on what Ram was saying, I think that clarity is something that I've found. I mean, it's a lot more, it's making a lot more sense now, as we keep going here. I mean, you said foundation, and I feel like we're you know, building things on top of things, and it's all making more sense to me now.
Good.
But definitely starting to notice and develop that understanding, like you're saying, and it's pretty nice.
Yeah, it is. And again, this is, like I say, it's not exactly how the Buddha presented it, but it's pretty close. And mostly in this order, too. You know, in other words, he taught the first, the Four Noble Truths in his first teaching. Then he went on to develop meditation within those five fellows. He discussed the four foundations of mindfulness. And then in that discussion of the Four Noble Truths, he presented the Eightfold Path, which is what we're going to do. And then his next sermon was on the three marks of existence, on anicca, anatta, and dukkha. And that's where we'll be in week seven. And then interspersed throughout his teachings, he referred back to dependent origination in certain ways. In some ways it was not directly, but awakening is awakening to dependent origination. So it's not necessarily a teaching to develop, but more of a something to be aware of in this context. And again, we'll get to that in week eight. Anthony, how about you? How was your...
When you say homework, do you mean how you found that you've applied right view and right intention in your life, like this?
Well, that's this week. Yeah. Last week was developing a deeper understanding of the Four Noble Truths. But, you know.
Well, this week, you know, it was like, reflect back on the year. I've had some big cases go south for reasons I can't control, which is a whole impermanence thing. People died, people had other accidents. Yeah. But today, yesterday it started disintegrating, and today it officially collapsed in a case that I thought was worth probably $6 million. And
wow. Oh, boy.
I'd been assured that there was coverage, you know, umbrella coverage by an insurance expert and by another attorney. They both didn't see a particular cause, and the case just, you know, went down to a $15,000 case with $6 million worth of injuries. And
wow.
At first, you get that little glimmer of why me, this always happens to me, and then you realize, well, first of all, there's people really seriously injured who aren't going to get that money, but second of all, it's not really that important.
Yeah.
And I said, I'm going to deal with this by taking my most seriously injured client, who's a quadriplegic, and visiting him to the hospital tomorrow and giving him gifts and making his day a lot brighter.
That's incredible.
Because that's why I got into this, and that's what it's all about. And in the long run, I'll do fine. I've done fine. It was a good year anyway.
Yeah.
And so I thought, if that's the way to deal with it, is to put the right intention in the right place.
Yeah. Good for you, Anthony. I mean, you... And
that would have destroyed me a year ago.
and a lot of people, not just you.
Yeah.
You know? And that's the essence of right view. We'll talk about it a little bit more. But that's when we're holding right view, we can respond to the world in a useful and meaningful way rather than a selfish way and looking at what I lost. And you freed yourself of the experience of the unsatisfactoriness of that experience. It could have been very unsatisfactory, even painful for you. But because of your view, it wasn't.
And the attorney that didn't analyze it right, she said, you seem very calm about this. And I said, well, what's the point in going berserk? Like, why would I blow a gasket? What is that going to accomplish?
Yeah.
I said, you're a human being. You made a mistake. We all make mistakes.
Yeah, that's right. We do. Good for you. Thanks for bringing that up. Brian, how about you? How was your week's study?
Not too bad. Not too bad. I've been, work has been very busy. I work from home full time. I'm in IT. So it's kind of nice to leave the office and be done with your day, but when you work from home, so I think meditation, I've really been trying to really kind of distance myself from it mentally. You know, I meditate in the morning, meditate after work, and then sometimes one more time before bed. And I'm just trying to it seems to be helping to kind of like, you know, become the two different, you know, there's Dad Brian and other Brian, and then there's work Brian. So I'm trying to differentiate between the two so I don't just keep work with me 24/7.
And they're all anatta.
So it's going okay. It's going okay. It's tough when you do get stressed out though, because you can't leave the office.
Yeah. And that's what the practice is for. Are you starting to see the broader picture too? That it's not just meditation. There's other factors in meditation. The concentration we develop in meditation is what supports developing the understanding through that broader framework.
And realizing that it's beyond the meditation, that it's making me a better, father, or more focused at work, or more, whatever I have going on. So definitely, just sitting.
Yeah, it is. I remember when I first came across Eastern philosophies, I really believed that if I could just get the right meditation technique and have the right experience, that'd be it. I'd be another one of those awakened beings that lived forever and could fly around, the cosmos and all. It didn't work out. But I spent a lot of time trying to have that experience, and being involved in groups that reinforced that was something worthwhile to go after. It really wasn't. Brett, it's good to see you.
You too. Good to be here. I haven't really been studying the course. But I'm here.
Glad you're here.
So, fascinating.
Well, you've been through the book and the course, and so you understand that there's a wider framework for meditation. Is what I just talked about, and how the other.
And right after, if you don't have that, there's not going to be too much clarity or focus, and it's really kind of pinpoint your efforts in a way.
Yeah, it is. Good. Glad you're here, Helen.
Hello, John.
Good to see you.
Thank you. You too. It's good to be here. It's always good to be here. I'm getting better about getting at least one meditation in a day. I'm still not at two, but it does help. And sometimes they're not. I usually try first thing in the morning, but sometimes I do it as needed too, and it's been helpful. And I've been reading some Thich Nhat Hanh books also, which has helped me a lot too. He has such a gentle way of phrasing things, and you just feel like he's right there when you're reading it. Mm-hmm. So that's really nice. And I've been reading your book more faithfully, so I'm getting there.
You are. I'm glad you're here. And my eyes aren't that good. Have you been here before, young lady?
No, I haven't. I'm Helen's daughter,
this
Natalie.
This is Natalie.
Oh, well, it's so nice to meet you. Fine.
And, this is my Aunt Liz.
Ah, okay. So it's all in the family.
My mentor, artist, mentor, Bunny.
Well, welcome to our sangha, Natalie.
Thank you.
How is your Dhamma practice going and your understanding of the Four Noble Truths?
Since I've been here, you don't know much about it, but I've been interested for a long time.
Great.
I've been studying for a while. I was in Nepal last year.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
And thank you all for whoever contributed to the aid of all of that.
Yeah.
My mom really pulled through and helped me out with that, and so we did all of you. I really very, very much appreciate that, and so do the families that were involved.
That was a wonderful project for us.
So, I as far as meditation goes, I try to every day. I have insomnia, and it works best when I'm trying to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Works best in my relationship with a feisty Brazilian. And I think that helps the best.
So your meditation somehow controls him?
Oh, no.
That's rather mystical too.
Losing control to control, is that?
That's a good way to put it. Yeah.
That's the fifth note.
Can we restart writing the rules there? No. It's good to be here.
It's good to have you.
My mom has two copies of the book, and I saw one on her bedstand, and I was like, that's awesome, and I found one in my room a little later, and found out that it was you and your teaching, so I'm excited to open it up.
Great. I hope you find it useful.
Yeah.
And again, welcome to our sangha.
Thank you.
Bonnie, how are you?
Good,
the artist mentor.
No pressure.
Some days clear.
Yeah, no pressure.
Yeah. Some days clear, some days confusion. You know, so.
That's ancient.
Yeah.
How was your week study on the Four Noble Truths?
Well, you know, it's also cyclical. And when I'm reading it, I'm thinking, wait, is this, am I in chapter 3? Or am I in chapter 4? And so I open it up, and where it is, that's what I need. But it's also connected,
yeah.
Because to know that the stress in the body and the feeling and then the mindfulness and then to remember, you know, right view and intention and... that all of that keeps me safe. So if I go back and I see myself, and it's like, you know, just so being kind, and that's so where I am with all the noble truths.
That's such great insight, Bonnie, to see that. It took me a while to realize that everything the Buddha taught relates to everything else he taught, and everything is interconnected. If there's that, and that word is often misused in the Dhamma too, interconnected and interdependent, but it all fits together, you know, and one thing leads to another. You can pick up something in chapter 8 and relate it back to Shamatha Vipassana meditation or to the Four Foundations of Mindfulness.
So you, on your website, in one of the articles, I can't remember the name, it was maybe because I was interested in it in rebirth and reincarnation.
Yeah.
But it really goes back to being really simple in a way, and the about it's where you are now.
Yeah.
What you create now, you know, which goes back to going back to the beginning. It's like each one builds on itself and comes back. And in a way, it's sort of like in my own early education, you know, I was raised in Judaism, but what I remember when I was really little, how they said basically, because we said this, you know, I lived in a very Christian neighborhood, so I was talking about heaven and hell, and they're like, you created here, which was what I was taught. So you create heaven or hell on earth, because when you leave, you there's nothing, or they don't know. But in a way, what I was reading today was really curious, because it was talking about, really goes back to your karma is created by how you are and how you,
yeah.
Where you are in relationship to looking at all the noble truths and your impermanence, and you know, so it just
yeah.
keeps reconnecting like a sort of a Mobius strip or something. Like that.
Yeah, it does. Even the teachings on karma and karma and rebirth have been so misunderstood. There's just basic, simple teachings. And even the teaching on rebirth, what's most important about rebirth is to understand that each moment we're giving birth to a new experience. And that new experience can be moving us towards awakening, or we can continue the delusion and creating an unsatisfactory nature of life. And that's the most important teaching about rebirth. The aspect of transitioning from a physical body to a non-physical body to maybe another physical body that you would be inhabiting really doesn't matter. You can consider it. It's just part of a continuum, but that doesn't mean anything to our lives right now anyway. So who cares? You know, who cares? But it's important to understand it, because a true understanding of physical rebirth is also important and can help guide your Dhamma, but it doesn't impact what's going on right now. And most people, I'm giving the week 9 talk, but most people misunderstand karma and think that it's basically punishment, and it has nothing to do with that. It's not. There's nothing out acting on me because I did something wrong. It's my actions that are going to bring the result of that into my life. So karma is the present moment unfoldment of past intentional and volitional actions impacted by the quality of our mindfulness right now. So I may have set in motion a whole chain of events that I'm going to experience, but the experience of them is contingent on the quality of my mindfulness or the lack of quality. And if I'm well focused within the Dhamma, any experience I have, whether it's ripening of some bad fruit, is going to be a pleasant experience because I'll understand it, or at least a meaningful experience. So that then there is no, there's no pain in karma. It just isn't. So thank you for bringing that up. Lorna, it's good to see you.
Thank you. Good to be here. I don't really have much to say about, you know, specifically about the study. I've just tried to have a, you know, sort of a regular week. I've enjoyed myself. I think everything's going fine. Meditation's going good. Nothing has sort of really hit me this week, sort of from the teachings. However, I could tell you a little story about how I've improved my meditation, if you'd like to hear that.
I would.
As you know, I'm seeing Matt with my acupuncture.
Yeah.
And he talked to me and said that when you meditate, you really should use your belly, your tummy, not your chest, more your belly. So your belly should sort of go in and out and in a relaxed manner. And that's a bit of a change for me. So thinking about that in the bathroom, I stood in front of the bathroom mirror with not many clothes on and stood and just watched my belly go in and out as I breathe. And just watched it for a moment or two, a few minutes. So that now when I'm on the cushion, I can recreate that and think about breathing with my belly and have that imagination of what I saw in the mirror, my reflection in the mirror. And actually, it helps me hold concentration on my breathing.
Oh, good for you.
Which is
good for Matt.
So, okay.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. That's wonderful. Again, that's the beauty of the Sangha. You know, you support each other with that. So thank you.
It's helpful. It helped me. Yeah. I've got visual, and I can think about my tummy as I'm doing it, but also I have a visual of what I'm trying to recreate. It's good.
Good. Thank you. Lisa, how are you?
I'm good, John. Glad to be here. I love the Four Noble Truths. They free me and give me hope. That's just that's how I just look at them, and I'm excited about moving forward with the Eightfold Path. So I feel very comfortable with the Four Noble Truths. To me, they're simple. I get them. I am clear when I'm having dukkha, and I am clear why I'm having it. And it's just that reminder that there's a whole path for me to follow, and it's not one thing. It's not, you know, right. It's not just meditation, and it's not just thinking, and it's not just acting, and it's a combination of, you know, just showing up in that space regardless of what's going on. And you know, I have to make a commentary because while I was connecting that karma conversation with what Anthony shared, because seriously, had he approached that differently, like he said he would have a year ago, he would have had a nightmare. And instead, you ended up having a really amazing experience out of that. And as a result, we were able to share that with you. So I really appreciate, I just appreciate all of it. And I'd like to see the connection. And it was just amazing. That's all I could think of as you was talking about it. And it wasn't that just something better happened. It's just that his whole approach to that, like that's what I could see, your whole approach to that situation shifted not just your energy, but the energy of the people around you. And that is just spectacular. Anyway, that's the power of the power of
it. Power of the Sangha. Yeah. Thank you. And just to make a point about karma too, or kama, in that experience, you set in motion your kama, your unfolding of your own mindfulness. It could have gone, you could have screamed and hollered at the person and or done something terrible, that would have changed your immediate future and probably your long-lasting future. But because you acted with mindfulness, what unfolded was pleasant for you and everybody else. And that's a great example of how karma works. Impacted by your present moment of mindfulness, you turned that situation, you kept that situation mindful and loving and compassionate. where it could have gone another way, and a lot of other situations it probably would have. It's just a great teaching on calm and mindfulness. Thank you. Thank you for bringing it up and inspiring that. Liz, how are you?
I'm doing well. My practice is going well. I was also very moved by what Anthony said. And it shows you what forgiveness and reconciliation can do, not just for you, but also for the person that you offered that support to when you said, you know, these, however you said it. So it could have sent your life off in one direction as well as, you know, this other person. And so anyway, I think that was a very moving story. Yeah, that and that's all I have to say.
Thank you, Liz. Rick, how are you?
It's good. It's been a hectic week, real hectic week, so I haven't really read as in-depth as I'd like to. Just couldn't focus every time I tried to read it and really get into it. It just, my mind was taking me somewhere else. So, but I've been just trying to let go of when I'm in situations. Like Anthony said, a few times this week, there was things that I normally would not let go, and it just affects my whole day. And I just, at that point, I said, it's not worth it, just let it go. And it not only helped me, but it helped everybody in the situation around me. It wasn't worth arguing over.
Yeah.
And actually the situation turned out better. Once all the tension was gone, we resolved the issues, and it was helpful. Yeah.
Good for you. And sometimes it's just like that. We can't, it's just not the time to understand the Four Noble Truths, but we developed the framework. It's, you know, a 10-week pass through these teachings is not likely to bring awakening to many of us. But continued practice will. And I think one of the things that we talk about in the usefulness of the Sangha is we hear other people, how they're progressing along this, using what we're doing right here. Meditation within the broader framework, and it delivers these very practical and useful results. This is what gives me, there's a word called sada, which is often translated to mean faith, and relating to that you need sada in order to develop Buddhism or teachings of the Buddha. And I see that a better interpretation of that word sada as conviction. I have conviction because I can see the benefits of it. I don't take anything on faith. I experience the results of these teachings. And when we come together as a Sangha and talk about that, that's what we're talking about, the experience of developing this understanding. And it really is remarkable. So let me get into tonight's talk. So the Four Noble Truths. The first noble truth is that life is dukkha, meaning there is a general unsatisfactory nature to life that underlies everything. And so almost every time I talk about that, somebody will put their hand up and say, you mean life just stinks? And that's not really what the Buddha is saying. But it's because of the second noble truth that no matter what experience we have in life, it's ultimately going to be unsatisfactory because of anicca, because of the three marks of existence. And in order to understand that, there's a whole Dhamma that teaches understanding of that. The second noble truth is that craving and clinging originates dukkha, originates that unsatisfactory nature of life. And Anthony, again, gave a great example of how that works. The unsatisfactory nature of life arises from an attachment to an ego personality, that which the Buddha said was anatta, not a self, wanting things to be different than they are. So that experience that Anthony talked about, that the $6 million lawsuit fell through, if he was holding on to it, there's going to be an ongoing unsatisfactory experience and probably not a very Merry Christmas in the Murgatroyd household. But because Anthony was able to stay in the present moment and accept whatever was occurring, there was no craving and clinging and no furthering of that unsatisfactory experience. You've heard me talk about the Salada Sutta, and some of you heard the talk. The Salada Sutta is a sutta on the two arrows. So the first arrow is an unsatisfactory experience. The second arrow we stick in ourselves because we insist that it be different, and we create more anguish and upset for ourselves. That's how craving and clinging arises. So craving would be wanting a situation to be different than it is, maybe more of it, maybe less of it. And clinging is when we attach an ego personality, anatta, to that experience. And we start creating a conditioned mind around that experience. And that whole experience leads us down this road of, of continual distraction and confusion and suffering. The third noble truth is that cessation of dukkha and the undoing of this process of craving and clinging, creating an ego personality subject to suffering, ending that, cessation of that, is possible. And so, in other words, it's possible to undo all these clinging attachments that we've made to impermanent objects, views, and ideas. And in unraveling these things, we're freeing ourselves. And we do it in a very mindful way, in a very practical way. How do we do it? Within the framework of the Eightfold Path, we recognize where our attachments are, where we're clinging, and how we're forming more. And if we can be mindful of that, we'll cease creating those attachments and we'll start unraveling the ones we've made. Does that make sense? That's how the Dhamma works.
And if I could just add something, you've often said, if you have an agitated mind, to do metta before you meditate. And I just made the connection that what I did was almost the same, because I decided that I was going to reach out to my most seriously injured client who can't move from the neck down and bring him gifts and show him love, because that's really where it's at. You know, if I think I have problems, this man can't walk, can't feed himself, can't dress himself, can't get out of bed. I mean, you can go on and on and on.
Yeah.
And so to show him love sort of evaporates or extinguishes whatever little anger you might have about something that didn't go right for you, that really in the scheme of things isn't very important anyway.
Yeah, you're so right. And using metta when your mind is agitated to help settle your mind in meditation is one of the, in fact, that's the reason why the Buddha taught metta initially, was that some monks were agitated because of things going on in the forest, and he taught them metta so that they could calm their minds enough to meditate.
And also to feel more, try to feel, and I think I do, feel more sorry for the people who are losing the bigger part of that case, because they're the ones with the injuries. Mm. It's just income for me.
Yeah, you're so right. Thank you for that. So cessation of dukkha is possible. And then the fourth noble truth is that the path leading to cessation of dukkha, towards an unsatisfactory experience no matter what occurs, is the Eightfold Path. So sometimes when I'm just thinking about the four noble truths, I see them as this beautiful jewel that's in this little box. And you open up the box, and everything you need is in that little box, because it's the Four Noble Truths. It's all included in there. And again, I mean, that's just the way that I see it sometimes. And just to reiterate, and then everything the Buddha taught is inside that box, because it relates to that gem of the Four Noble Truths. And it's so important to remember that, to be mindful of that fact, because then everything makes sense. Dependent origination makes sense. Anatta makes sense with a little bit of study. Even the word dukkha starts making sense, because we understand that broad application of the unsatisfactory nature of life. It's all in that little box. So,
thank you for listening. For more Dhamma talks and articles, please visit crossrivermeditation.com. We rely on donations from our listeners to provide these talks. If you have found this talk helpful in developing your understanding of the Dhamma, please consider a donation at crossrivermeditation.com. This talk is copyrighted and is made available under Creative Commons 4.0 license. Please visit crossrivermeditation.com for use and distribution information. Peace.